This is Suit Up Sports.
Suit Up Sports.
Where opinions are as sharp as a tailored suit. No fluff, no gimmicks, just unfiltered, hard-hitting takes on sports and a whole lot more. It's time to suit up. Now here's your host, DJ The Suit Stout.
Welcome to Suit Up Sports. I'm DJ The Suit Stout, along with 10-year NFL veteran Frank Garcia. Frank, how you doing?
I'm doing great, buddy.
You excited about March Madness finally upon us?
Yeah, it's here, but hopefully we can get this, we have a March Madness. We got a lot of going on right now. We got free agency just around the corner.
Yep.
The non-tampering period's taking place. Duke, North Carolina over the weekend, some big games over the weekend, and the ACC tournament is starting Wednesday, I believe.
Starts tomorrow.
There we go.
And it's in Charlotte.
Yep.
So that's always great. You know, I know I talked about this earlier that, you know, anyone growing up in this area remembers the teachers rolling the TVs in during the ACC tournament around that noon game. And you knew class was done for the day and you got to watch the game, go home. And that was Thursday, Friday. As you get older and you have kids, you know I took my boys, I'd get them out of school early and take them to Greensboro for the tournament, you know, on a certain day or whatever, just regardless of who was playing. You know, obviously we're Duke fans, but whether Duke was playing or not, just going to the ACC tournament, it's just such a great event with each school's band playing and he's got the college kids all fired up and their face painted. You know, it's as close to a college football atmosphere as you can get.
Well, the downtown becomes electric.
100%.
You know, we're right there at the arena. I remember when Dixie Tavern used to be there.
Yeah.
We'd broadcast our radio show right across the street and it was just all basketball fans from around the East Coast coming here to Charlotte to enjoy their team and root their teams on. And you see a lot of fan bases, you know, when Syracuse was down here or Wake Forest or NC State,
mm-hmm.
You know, they have their periods when they come in and if they make a run, you know, you see that fan base start to develop a little bit more. Well, it'll be interesting this year. And I'm wondering, are you going tomorrow?
I'm going Wednesday.
So you're going Wednesday. I'm wondering if the enthusiasm and the excitement is going to be there this year, not just because it's in Charlotte, because I think Charlotte is a great city. Greensboro, in my opinion,
is the best.
And that's what it should have always been.
Yeah.
I hate the fact they moved up to Madison Square. I understand why they did it, you know, for the money, the monetary reasons, to give them an opportunity, all those things. But I wonder if the buzz is going to be there because the ACC really, there's really only one team in the ACC, in my opinion, that has a chance to win the tournament. And everybody in the ACC knows it. They're going to come root their programs on, but are they going to have the same electrifying atmosphere where they feel like, hey, we're going to make a difference in this game with our noise and our appearance, you know, to be able to beat the 500-pound gorilla right now, which is Duke.
Yeah. And you know, it'll be interesting too, because with the tournament starting tomorrow, you've got Notre Dame against Pitt at 2, Virginia Tech against Cal at 4:30, and then you got Florida State and Syracuse tomorrow night at 7. So there's really not a team there. There's not a team there from North Carolina. So that you expect the building will be about half full, probably. It'll be interesting to see how teams that have never been here before, for instance, it'll be interesting to see how SMU travels, how Stanford travels, how Cal travels. Well,
Stanford's not going to travel.
Yeah,
they have no chance, and they're coming from the East Coast and coming from the West Coast. So the only people are going to get here are the doctors and lawyers that live in Charlotte.
You're probably right. And then, you know, tomorrow, I think you'll obviously have a little more buzz, Wednesday, you know, Carolina plays at 2:30 Wednesday. So obviously the place is going to be packed for that. But then I think it could slow down again because you're looking at the winner of VT versus Cal against Stanford and then the winner of Florida State Syracuse against SMU. But then the next day on Thursday is when things are going to get cranked up. You could have you'll have Duke playing their first game. So obviously the crowd's going to be crazy. You'll have Carolina, if they win, playing Wake Forest after that. So two teams from North Carolina. And then that night, you're going to have a chance to see Louisville take on, you know, whether it be Stanford or the winner of the VT Cal game, and then Clemson taking on the winner of the SMU, either Florida State Syracuse game. Clemson will obviously bring some fans down here for this. And then Friday night could be great matchups, and obviously Friday will be packed. You could have the third edition of Duke Carolina
Do we really want to see that?
Well, you know, I do, because anytime you have a chance to go 3-0 against the Tar Heels, I'll take it. If you're a Carolina fan, I don't know if you really want that, although they know that they've got to win the tournament to get into the big tournament.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, when you watched that game the other night, and I know we're going to get into that, and I know you're talking ACC,
no, we can get into
the tournament
now,
right now, but I mean, it's a good way to transition into that game, is that when you watched that game the other night, North Carolina in the first half, in my opinion, played as good as they played all year, not just on the offensive side, but RJ Davis was hitting shots. They had a little flow. They were getting out in their fast breaks. They liked to run. They got Cooper Flag in foul trouble right away. Got three fouls first half. You know, just they had to sit him out two right away. They were attacking him, going at him, and really kind of putting the Blue Devils on their heels.
Yeah.
And you give them a ton of credit on the defensive side, because they got up on, as defenders, they got up and on Duke and said, you're going to have to beat us dribbling the basketball and getting to the hole. Duke still was shooting well, because they're just overmatched Carolina with size, in particular down low. It looked like also too, Duke initially was a little lackadaisical with the way that they came out, and lethargic maybe, you know, for that. And I give Carolina, I'm trying to give Carolina credit, because I think they played their best first half. Unfortunately, it was a tale of two halves, right? And the adjustments that Duke made at halftime is why I love what they're capable of doing, and why I think that they're going to be the best team in the tournament at the end, because they can make those adjustments and not lose a beat.
Yeah, I agree that I thought that was the best performance I've seen by the Tar Heels, you know, this year in the first half. And, you know, look, they had the lead with 15 minutes left in the second half. RJ Davis was shooting lights out.
RJ Davis didn't score a point in the last 18 minutes because of the adjustments that Duke made in the second half.
Well,
period.
To his
period.
Not necessarily. He left the game because he was cramping up. So when he left the game, I know a lot of Carolina fans were giving Hubert crap for taking him out of the game. And then after the game, found out that RJ Davis asked out of the game because he was cramping up. And then he was not the same after that. With that being said, you're totally right.
He didn't score.
Once the defense made change, Malik Brown was incredible. Getting him back is a big deal for Duke. He is a great defensive player. You know, he's a transfer from Syracuse. Great.
He's long. He's athletic. He gets rebounds. He keeps plays alive on the offensive board. And he hit two huge three-pointers in that game.
And he only had two threes coming into that game all year. So
When
he shot it, I was like, what is he doing?
He's coming off of an injury.
Oh, no doubt. And look, he seems to be involved in every play on the defensive end. So getting him back is huge for Duke. Like you said, Flag got in foul trouble, so he was never really a huge factor.
But he still did other things within the game. But what I loved about what they did in the second half, DJ, is they went big. They allowed the guards for Carolina to penetrate, RJ Davis out of the game, some of that portion of that that momentum changing 12-0 run that Duke went on. But they allowed Flag to play out a little further, forced the guy, or they attacked Flag. He let him through to a big defender where they came and they trapped him and didn't know what to do with the ball.
Well, right?
And that was the difference in why their percentage in the second half was like 26% versus the first half, like 40%.
And that's why Duke is such a tough matchup for anybody, because they're the tallest team in the country. They're a very long,
athletic,
which is a horrible matchup for what Tar Heel team is this year, where they lack that. And then Duke just keeps coming at you. I mean, Sion James, 16 points, 8 assists. Proctor played well. And you know, when you have a
Knipple hit some big shots.
No question. So Duke's loaded. And so that's, you know, even if Tar Heels make it to Friday night with a Duke rematch, I think that's an uphill battle. What I am excited about, though, is Friday night, the potential of Louisville against Clemson, because both of those teams can play. And Louisville's head coach, to me, is the coach of the year. I mean, he took over a complete empty cabinet. And in short time, you know, which the portal and the NIL, you can say, is why he was able to put it together so quickly. And there's definitely credence to that. However, we've also seen other teams fail at that. And so Louisville, you know, the fact that they were, I believe, 18-2 or 3 in the conference.
In the conference, they're 18-2, yep.
You know, that's incredible, coming off what an awful team they were last year and then to lose what they lost. So, to me, he's a coach of the year. And I know, obviously, Shire, having, you know, the season he had, is going to be involved as well. He should be. But, yeah, the ACC tournament is going to be a lot of fun to watch. Duke Carolina, you know, like I said, the first half, was great. Duke got out to a pretty good start, and then Carolina went on a run. You know, the one
Duke looked like they're going to run away with it there for a little bit at the beginning of the game.
But the one thing that Carolina did to Duke that I thought I have not seen Carolina play as physical as they did in the first half, and it seemed to kind of mess with Duke's rhythm. And I know you and I were texting during the game how you know, Carolina was getting up in Duke's faces, and it seemed to bother Duke for a while. Second half, like you said, Shire made some adjustments, and you know, Duke can just keep throwing guys at you. I mean, I think I jinxed Ingram, you know, because I talked about how I thought he was going to be a big guy in that
factor,
game,
and
I still do think he'll be a factor moving forward, but he struggled in that game. And Duke was lax. You're right; they were very lax days with the basketball turnovers. They made a lot of turnovers,
unforced turnovers that you don't normally see. Turnovers are one thing, right? Turnovers within a basketball game sometimes are caused.
Yep.
You give the other team a lot of credit, you know, for you doing whatever they're going to, you know, creating a defensive play. But unforced turnovers are something that every coach will pull their hair out, and it'll frustrate the hell out of you because it's just lackadaisic. It's just lack of focus.
Yep.
And that was my biggest concern with, you know, the kid from North Mech. And that's the reason why I didn't feel like he could be a full-time starter as of yet.
Yeah.
And he was gaining those opportunities. But I think Saturday night kind of pushed him back a little bit because he had two or three unforced turnovers
quickly too,
where it was, he got out there, he had an opportunity, turnover, had another chance, turnover with a dribble drive. And then finally, I think he made a basket or two, but momentum is created by those turnovers, especially when you're on the road and playing in a hostile environment. Yeah. And, it creates those runs.
Yep.
And that's what Shire and Duke or anybody is hard to overcome in those games. But he gave some good minutes. But I feel like the reason why he's coming off the bench still is because of the lack of consistency, you know, as a young player.
Yeah, and that's what I said. I think he will be an important piece off the bench moving forward, but he did struggle that game. Let's talk about moving forward into the NCAA tournament.
Well, let me ask you a question because I have not watched a lot of Louisville basketball. And listen, if I've seen it, I'm going to tell you what I know. But if I haven't, I'm going to tell you I haven't, right?
Yep.
And I haven't seen, you know, a lot of, and surprisingly, they're number 14 in the country. And again, I have not really paid as much attention to college basketball. And I think that's just because the amount of games, there's a lot of other, I'm more of a football guy. Mm-hmm. And then once football gets done, I think you and I both kind of turn our attention to college basketball, but basketball, me more back college than pros.
Yeah.
And I have not seen a lot of Louisville. I know quickly they're ranked 14th in the country. They've lost two games in conference. But they seem to be long and athletic and can run. What is it about this Louisville team that concerns everybody else in the ACC and why they've won so many games?
First of all, they play defense. They play very good defense, and they can shoot. I mean, they can shoot, and they're very cohesive as a team. You know, Pat Kelsey, like I said, he took over an abysmal situation, to do what he's done this year and finish, you know, really in a tie for second place in the ACC second seed in the tournament. To me, it's incredible, but they play very hard in your face defense. They've got decent size and they can shoot. They go, you know, I've watched them play a lot this year, and they'll go on runs where, you know, 10-0 runs, 12-0 runs, like in the blink of an eye. I remember at SMU was one of those games where I thought that was going to be a really good basketball game, and they just brought it to them right out of the gate, and it was never really a ball game. So
here would be my problem. I'm kind of scrolling through their schedule, going back all the way, to February and before. Where's their quality wins? Lost to Kentucky. Lost to Duke by 11. Lost to Ole Miss. And then they beat everybody in the ACC except for Duke, right? So where is their quality wins coming from? I mean, and that would be they lost to Tennessee by 22, early in the year.
Early, yeah.
They lost to Oklahoma. They lost to Ole Miss. They lost to Duke by 11. They lost to Kentucky. So where do their good wins come from? They beat Virginia. They beat Carolina. They beat Clemson. That's a good win. 74-64, 10-point win. But everybody else,
they beat SMU, and SMU, you know, look, and again, you play who you play, and Pat Kelsey took over the schedule that he had, as you know, like I said, as a brand new head coach. So you play who you play, but when their style of play creates problems. And to me, they kind of remind me of Maryland. And I'm not saying that they're as good as Maryland. I think Maryland, is an underrated team going into the tournament. But, you know, you're right. They haven't beat a lot of good teams. And listen, playing in the ACC this year, normally, you know, this is the first year in the history of the ACC basketball that there wasn't a matchup of two ranked teams. Like, that's unheard of. Carolina Duke's always, I mean, that it's incredible that was even a stat. Duke, you know, even
though have ever thought going into the ACC tournament, I mean, Clemson, maybe is Clemson right now top 25?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's now three teams, but who would have thought going into the tournament that there'd only be three teams in the ACC ranked in the top 25 and one of them not be Carolina?
Yeah, I agree.
Right. I mean, Duke's going to be the number one team in the country. Right. And then it's going to be, Louisville, I think, is like 13, 14, right around there. And then Clemson's probably right around that 24, 25.
Yeah, Duke's the only team in the top 10, you know, and honestly, the only team that deserves to be in the top 10 from the ACC. I mean, the ACC's down, but my point of that is when you are Louisville, they won the games they had to win. And listen, they're going to be dangerous, in the tournament because they get after it and they can shoot and they have good guard play. So it'll be interesting. Clemson's a team that I know both you and I have enjoyed watching this year who could be dangerous, and that leads me to something that you had sent last night about the KenPom and how, you know, which is the top 21 offenses with this top 31 defense.
So the KenPom is a measuring system that's been used over the last 20 years to rate, kind of efficiency and the way teams play either offense or defense.
Yep.
Right. It's a program put in place. It's, you know, kind of like what in the NFL with the not DraftKings, but the guys that evaluate the players, the guys that
odds makers. Not
the odds makers, the site that does it. I've lost my what that site is called. But anyways, this is what that is for basketball when it comes to, you know, the analytics that break down teams offensively and defensively, and they've come up with a great system.
Yeah, and listen, 96% of the national champions have come from the nine teams that they select each year. So
in the last 20 years, in the last 20 years, there has been 96% of the teams that have won the tournament have come from this formula.
Yep.
And that equals the 21 best offenses or the best offenses in the league versus the 31 best. And you have to combine them both.
Yep.
So if you're in top 21 and top 31, you're in this category. And there's only nine teams in the country this year that have done that. And 96% of those teams, of those nine teams this year, there might be less last year or more the year before, have gone on to win a national championship.
Yeah, and you know, there were some surprises when we looked at that and I was going over the nine teams.
What was your biggest surprise?
Get your pencil and paper ready because I know everyone will be getting ready to your brackets coming up in the next week or so. So I know you're going to want to write these teams down for your wager purposes, pool purposes. But
this is kind of the site that I tried to look earlier, the Pro Football Focus. This is kind of basketball,
like
the analytical part of Pro Football Focus.
Right. So first, there was no surprise that Duke is in there, Auburn's in there, Florida's in there. Those four, I think, doesn't surprise anybody. The next five, the next six, I think you could.
And this is not in any specific order. It's not like Auburn has the best offense and the best defense, and they're the number one team in this.
These
formula.
Are just the nine teams.
These are just nine teams in any random order. We'd haven't looked to see, you know, how they would rank, but I would guess Duke would be near the top.
Yeah.
And I guess Auburn would be I think they would be one and two, maybe Florida up there as well.
Yeah. Duke, Auburn, Florida. I don't think it surprised anybody. Houston would be the fourth team again, not the fourth statistic.
All one seeds, right?
You got to think they'll be, we'll see what happens in the tournaments. Iowa State, now that they're healthy, I totally think they're in there. I think they're the team that could certainly win the whole thing. But then these four teams surprised me. I don't think I would have guessed any of them. Texas Tech, and I watched them play, and they are. They're really good. They can score. Clemson, a team that you and I have both been on all year long.
I would have guessed them.
You see, that surprised me.
I would have guessed them because I know after watching them play Duke and Little John, DJ, I said, that is a team that nobody wants to face right now. They got a lot of momentum in that game. They had a great victory, took Duke down to the wire and ended up, beating them. Cooper Flagg slips with an opportunity to tie or win the game. Last second of the game.
Yeah.
But Clemson can play some defense, and they have some guards that can light it up and score. And they're kind of the utility knife, that the Swiss Army knife that they have in the middle, as a guy you really like.
Yeah, and he got his jersey, I guess, retired yesterday or whatever. I know it was senior night in Clemson this weekend, and so they're in there. Arizona surprised me.
You surprised Arizona's in there?
I don't think they play good enough defense. It surprised me that they would rank in the top. Now, listen, don't get me wrong. I think they're a good defensive team, but whenever I watch them play, that's what I think they lack. Maybe that's just me. But
the Pac-12 is so down this year.
Yeah, and the fact that they're a top 31 in defense surprised me. And then Maryland. I mean,
Maryland was my biggest surprise.
They're a tough team, but that surprised me, especially when, you know, and let's look at some of the teams that were left out of that would be Tennessee. Top five team, St. John's. Now, St. John's doesn't surprise me because their problem eventually is going to be not scoring the basketball, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
So they're probably not top 21 offense.
Exactly. Yeah. Michigan State. Izzo's got another really good team there.
Play great
year.
Defense.
They play great defense, but again, the scoring, you know, is what's going to get them. Clemson, by the way, you know, is 11th in the country now. They've moved up the ladder, in Maryland 13. So, you know, that the rest of the teams in there didn't surprise me. But Maryland, Arizona, Clemson, Texas Tech did kind of surprise me. But those nine teams, if you believe in statistics and a 20-year run of having 96% success rate, those your national championships most likely going to come from those nine teams. So,
well, let me give you the Pro Football Focus version, the KenPom version. Who do you think the number one defense in the country is?
In
college basketball.
College basketball? Duke.
They're number five.
Okay. My second choice would be probably St. John's.
St. John's is
way down.
St. John's is 35.
Wow. Okay.
So that's the reason why they're not in it, because you have to be top 31. Tennessee isn't in the KenPom.
I know they're not in the KenPom. I'm just curious.
They're not in the top 50.
Wow. So who are the top three?
Top three.
This is defense only, right?
This is defense only. Houston.
I forgot them. Yeah, they always
number one.
Yeah,
in the country, 58.1 points a game.
Yeah,
that's what they're giving up. Opponent points, 1,800 points. Two and three, really four, five, maybe five. You might give them some credit. St. Mary's out of California, they're at 60 points a game. They're five. Wagner, North Texas, and Drake.
Yeah, I mean those teams play nobody. Yeah,
so we'll exclude those teams, right? Duke. Mm-hmm. I'll take that back. I did not see Tennessee. Tennessee is number seven.
Yeah, they play.
That's why I didn't see them, because they were up there near the top.
They can't score.
They can't score the ball. They go through spurts where they just can't put the ball in the ocean. Yep. Duke's number six. Tennessee's number seven. Of the other teams that are on this list, gosh, it's go down to UCLA's up there, but they're not on this list. Clemson is on this list at 30. So those are the top teams. And I think these are, when they're talking about this KenPom ranking, this is teams in Division I basketball.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
So that's the reason why. Texas Tech is on there.
Yeah.
Virginia, believe it or not, is on there.
Well, Virginia, coach, that's what he coaches. He coaches at UNC Charlotte. And so I'm all too familiar watching a team that can play really good defense.
Maryland plays great defense.
Yep.
They can
score too.
You know, those are the teams that, you know, we're talking about on here. And I have not seen Auburn yet, so which is a surprise. Maybe I'm just missing them. Yeah, I don't see Auburn on this list as of, yeah. I mean, they're not even in the top 50, so I'm not sure where this is, you know, this is on this. Maybe this is just the scoring average.
Maybe they haven't updated.
I think what they may be doing, they may be taking a lot of different stats into consideration when it's total defense, right? This was just scoring defense.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, turnovers, things like that, forced turnovers. There's probably a little formula that they use to be able to get this KenPom ranking, just like they would in Pro Football Focus.
Right, right. Well, there's your nine teams to bet on in the NCAA tournament for your winner. Auburn, Florida, Houston, Duke, Iowa State, Texas Tech, Clemson, Arizona, Maryland. It'll be interesting to see how all those teams do in their conference tournaments this weekend or this week and this weekend. I'm guessing that we'll probably see all those teams make it pretty far and then moving on to the NCAA tournament, obviously with high seeds. But there you go for your college basketball betting update and pool update.
Well, yeah, the thought behind this whole thing was that if you're going to be betting during the tournament, the bracket, these nine teams have a nine, one of these nine teams have a 90, one of these teams, there's a 96% percent chance that one of these teams is going to win a national championship.
Yep.
So that means these teams are likely to make good deep runs because of the formula that's in place over the last 20 years.
Well, I mean, 96% chance is about as good of odds as you're going to get when you're looking for a smart bet,
smart wager.
We'll get we're going to take a little quick break. We're going to come back. It's a free agency in the NFL has begun. The non-tampering period, which is ridiculous. I don't even know why they call it that.
You'll have to explain that.
Yeah, deals are breaking every second. The Panthers, with some big news this morning, signed a J.C. Horn, their Pro Bowl cornerback, to the biggest deal for any cornerback in the NFL history as of right now. We'll see if that changes. But $100 million over 4 years, average of $25 million a year. It does save the Panthers $5 million on the salary cap this year, which is good because they've got a lot of holes to fill. And we'll get into that when we get back from this.
It's time to suit up. Here's your host, DJ The Suit Stout.
Welcome back to Suit Up Sports. DJ The Suit Stout along with Frank Garcia. Having some fun talking some college hoops. Now we're going to dive into the NFL. Today, free agency for the most part begins. The non-tampering portion of free agency, which was created to keep teams from cutting backdoor deals, which they're still cutting backdoor deals. I'm not really sure why they needed to start it, but it's good for us because basically it's like free agency starting a few days early. Already there's been a lot of movement, not just with free agency, but the Seattle Seahawks trading DK Metcalf to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a second round pick. They'll be giving him a five-year, $150 million contract. The Panthers supposedly were the team closest to getting him. They'd offered a high third-round pick and $120 million. So,
well, here's going to be my concern with Panthers. I know the buzz is about the Panthers and the Patriots right now going into this offseason. At least for Panther fans, that gives us some hope and some optimism. But I think the reality comes down to, with the Panthers in particular, I think Dan Morgan knows well enough that, you know, when it comes to free agency, you don't want to have to overpay for guys. Teams that are built for championships and have their foundation in place, that's where the free agents are going to really kind of start coming in and, you know, maybe making a bigger difference for those teams where they're going to be the players. I'm not a big believer in free agency for building. I think, you know, when, look, for example, last year, the Philadelphia Eagles, they had all the pieces in place. And that's where they go out there and they get a Saquon Barkley, right? That's a great free agent move. But if you're trying to build a roster based on overpaying free agents, you're never gonna be able to build the foundation, you know, with that, unless you get lucky in the draft. I think the best way to do that is get depth, especially for a team right now like the Panthers that aren't built for a championship right now. We're just not. I mean, I know you want to and I want to, but that'd be like the equivalent of, DJ, us living in a mobile home trailer and going to buy a yacht when we get a little money.
Yeah, but here's where first of all, I'll say this. I think every GM in the NFL will tell you, you build your team through the draft. I think that's probably in any sport for the lack of, but in the NFL in particular, I think every GM will tell you.
We're not built yet.
Well, let me finish my point. When you have a team like the Panthers, who, you know, with a one-year GM, a new, you know, one-year head coach, you know, very new, you know, front, Brent Tillis, mm-hmm. the salary cap guru, 1 year. So you've got a very new front office. You have a lot of holes to fill. So I think that you, and every team will tell you, I think you have to use a mixture of free agency and the draft being the most important. However, you do need to use free agency to fill some holes. And when you have nine picks like the Panthers do in the draft this year, you're in a position to where if you can fill a few holes, especially on the defensive side of the ball, it opens you up now to draft whether or move around the draft or whatever. But I think that you have to do both. And I think the Panthers are not going to sign a huge, my friend, I was very surprised that they were even in on the DK Metcalf, because you and I both agreed we'd love to have him, but to give him $30 million a year when we have all these other holes is the same reason we agreed that Brian Burns' trade last year was smart, because we needed that money to fill other holes. And so what I think you're going to find with the Panthers are, is that, and I'll say this also about the salary cap.
Who's closer to winning a championship in your opinion? The Steelers or the Panthers? The Steelers, and it's not even close.
Steelers.
Right? They make the playoffs every year.
Let me ask you this. But how many teams? You can make a handful of teams have a chance, a legitimate chance to win the Super
Bowl. We aren't one of them.
Well, okay, but that doesn't happen overnight. So you have to build your team through the draft and with some smart free agent signings. You
smart.
Have to. Okay, well,
that's not overpaying.
Well, let me ask you this. Don't you think Charlotte, and we've seen this over the years, and you kind of alluded to this a second ago, Charlotte is not necessarily a hot destination for free agents. It's never been. We've always had to, in every sport, the Panthers have always had to overpay a little bit.
That's
100% true.
No,
that's 100% true.
No, that's true in basketball.
It's true.
That's not true in football.
It sure is.
Football, what's true is, as a player, is I'm going to go whoever pays me the most. I don't care what city it's in.
Not true.
It is true.
Metcalf could have went to New England and for more money and said, I don't want to go to New England. He's on record as saying that.
Because the Steelers have a better chance to win. He doesn't want to go to a rebuilt team. The Panthers don't have, they're not going to be the same team with what we have in place that the Steelers or one of these playoff contending teams
have.
But you
don't know what they have in place because you have to see what they have
in place. The Panthers, I do know what they have.
And after the draft.
I do know what they have.
You don't know what they have.
I do.
They'll be.
They have a 5-12 roster.
But right for last season.
Yes.
What is that? That doesn't include any moves they're going to make.
They haven't made any.
Well, you've got to give them time. You're judging them on last year's
team. I am.
Why?
Because they're not very good.
Okay.
Well, the worst defense in the league.
So should they just close the door and not even
No, that's not what I'm saying.
That is what you're saying.
No, it's not
what I'm saying.
Don't tell me what I'm saying.
Well, that's what you're saying.
That's not what I'm saying.
100%
not what I said at all.
You're saying that.
I said that you're not going to overspend for big free agents.
Who have they overspent on as a free agent so far?
Nobody.
Okay. Well, then why are you complaining about it?
Because
you don't know who they're going to sign yet.
Because DJ Metcalf is not a guy that is even possible.
We're not arguing about DJ Metcalf.
We are. No, we are. No, that's what we're talking about.
I agree with you that that would not have been.
I'm not saying don't go get free agents. I'm just saying we shouldn't overpay for big free agents in week one or day one.
And what I'm saying is we don't know that, number one, they've overpaid anybody yet. Number two, what I'm saying is when it comes to the salary cap, you said this earlier, the salary cap's kind of an invisible sign. Most teams, and if you have the right guy handling the salary cap, which the Panthers, Brant Tillis is known in the NFL as one of the best. He was very successful with the Chiefs when we got him. And the Chiefs, as we see how many Super Bowls they've won in the last 5-6 years.
What's he done?
Well, with us. Well, here's what he's done. He's cleaned a complete mess of salary cap and a roster in one year.
By doing what?
By cutting players and not resigning players. Last year, he let a lot of guys go. He didn't overpay anybody.
Well, I thought that we weren't talking about last year.
Well, you just said, what did he do already? Well, if I'm going to talk about what he did, I got to talk about what he did last year.
Okay.
Last year,
we were 5-12.
I'm trusting him this year when he now has a lot of salary cap room with the Panthers getting rid of a lot of dead money that he helped get rid of. Let's see what he does with the money. We don't know if he's got to overpay anybody. Now, overpaying, by the way, also is to the eyes of the beholder. You may think he overpays. I may think he overpays, but they may say, look, we think this is a great deal. Or they may say, yeah, we had to overpay at this position a little bit because it was slim pickings and we needed to fill this hole. I think you have to wait and see what the situation is. I don't think you can just.
Did they overpay for J.C. Horn?
Well,
I'm asking you a question. Well, they overpaid.
First of all, let's let the audience remember. Let them know what the Panthers did.
Okay, go ahead.
They signed Jason.
Probably a good idea.
Exactly. Yeah. They re-signed J.C. Horn today. $100 million deal. Yeah. 4-year deal. 70 of that guaranteed. Saves the Panthers.
What does he become? The highest paid.
The highest paid corner.
Did they overpay for him?
Well, let's finish the story real quick.
Okay.
It did save $5 million on the cap this year, which, again, they haven't really released the exact way the contract structured.
Right. That's right.
However,
they never will.
And if they do, at least knowing that they freed up $5 million for this year's salary cap when you need to fill a lot of holes is a good deal. Did they pay J.C. Horn a little bit? I would say yes.
Thank you for being honest.
Could they have let – but I think it's a great signing because I don't think you could let him leave the team. And here's why. Number one – and you said this before, you don't want to lose your homegrown guys. If you draft guys well, you want to keep them. So
very true.
And J.C. Horn's
very true.
A guy that's been here or drafted here. Number two, he's really the only corner they have on the team as of now. And the cornerback market is average at best this year. So
I thought the cornerback market was pretty deep.
No, this year you got DJ Reed from the Jets, who's going to get paid. He's the number one corner.
He's 28 years old.
You have Tavarius Ward, 29 years old. And then you've got, those are two of the top only 20 free agents. So you got Rasul Douglas, who is 30 years old.
So you have a huge draft coming up with a lot of young corners.
And every draft does, and there's no way they won't draft some corners, whether they re-sign or not. But my point is, if you don't re-sign, and J.C. Horn, to be clear, had a year left on his deal, so they re-signed him. He wasn't a free agent, so he would not have been able to leave. But
they restructured.
Correct, and extended it.
To free up $5 million.
Freed up five and keep him in the future, which is what the goal of the whole thing was. And saving $5 million was obviously a bonus. So it's an average free agent class as far as the free agency goes. The draft is top heavy. There in the first couple rounds, there are some really good corners to be had. Again, you never seen him play in the NFL, so that's always a risk as any draft choice. But I think they had to keep him because, number one, they have no corners. I mean, I just said Rasul Douglas is, like, this is the fourth best free agent quarterback. He played for the Panthers, like, 6 years mm-hmm. ago, you know. So I think they had no choice to keep him. The one thing about J.C. Horn, and the reason that I'm guessing, and you can speak for yourself, but the reason I think that you think that they overpaid, and again, I agree they probably overpaid him a little bit, I just think it was a good move, is the fact that he, in his 3 years here, has had a hard time staying on the field. Now,
well, I could tell you why if you want to ask me. I mean, yep. you don't have to interpret or guess. I'll tell you. I'll tell you why. Because he's a former top 10 pick. He's missed a season out of 3 years that he's played.
Which is what I just said, that he's had a hard time staying on the field.
That's part of it. He really hasn't had the numbers. He has potential to be a really good player when he's healthy.
Correct.
But we've also let, you know, so, you know, other players go, like a Christian McCaffrey, who is still in his prime, by the way.
Who didn't play last year. Because he was hurt.
Okay, so what makes J.C. Horn not be hurt? Those are the unknowns. What I will tell you is that he's missed 11 games in his 3-year career, right? We sit here and we about LaMelo not playing, even though he's a really good player when he plays, right? And we should keep him we should trade him, right? We should trade McCaffrey when he doesn't play. He's a Hall of Famer, right? We should trade him away, but we should keep J.C. Horn. Because he's missed just as many games percentage-wise as both of those players have.
J.C. Horn is coming off a Pro Bowl season. He's a Pro Bowler this year. So hold on.
You and I would have been Pro Bowl the way the Pro Bowl is played nowadays. He wasn't a vote-in Pro Bowl player. He was a backup. He fell into a Pro Bowl because the other two guys in front of him didn't want to go.
He was a top 10 cornerback in the NFL this year, period. So when he was on the field, which was this year, he had a great year. So you can choose to, and again, the Panthers brass know his makeup and his character and his injuries much more than we do. So they obviously have decided that he is worth taking a chance of extending and hope that he keeps and stays on the field. This year he did that. Now, you could sit here and tell me that the reason he did that was because he knew he was coming up for a contract. And we see that all the time in every sport. I trust that Dan Morgan, who has been on record many times saying we only want dogs on this team, must think that J.C. Horn's a dog and must think that his injuries that kept him off the field were legitimate injuries. You keep bringing up Christian McCaffrey, and he missed in the last 2 or 3 years that he was with the Panthers. I mean, he rarely played, and no one's ever saying that he was, you know, his hamstring, because he got a big bag of money too and then didn't play a lot. It's a risk you have to take. J.C. Horn's 23 years old, I believe. Mm-hmm. Having a Pro Bowl season where he played great, top 10 cornerback, he's the kind of guy you've got to keep on your team. You can't let him go, especially when that is a huge need on your team. If you let him go, who's your starting corners? I mean, you said that me and you could be in the Pro Bowl this year if we play the way they do it. Well, we might be their starting corners this year if you look at it that way. They would have him for one more year.
We still wouldn't be a starter. You're back and we wouldn't be able to run.
That's true. I think they have had no choice to keep him. And I think that when you draft the guy and he shows potential and he's coming off a Pro Bowl year, it's a smart
move. I have no problem with J.C. Horn. I think J.C. Horn is a good football player when healthy. Whether he's a top 10 guy or not, it's to be determined. He had a good season, right, for the Panthers. Most teams didn't have to throw the ball because if they're so bad. The Panthers were so bad on the other side. They said, we're going to take the lesser of two evils. J.C. Horn may not be great, but we're going to pick on the other guy who's terrible. And we're not going to go at J.C. Horn. So you know what that's going to do? It's going to increase his numbers. It's going to increase his value. Well, it's going to increase all the things that go along with that. Right. We don't know how good J.C. Horn is yet, because a lot of the times when he's out there, he's been healthy. And the other times, the other guys have been so bad, they don't go at J.C. Horn. He's the tallest midget on the Panthers. And I think J.C. Horn can be a good player. I do think I like the way he plays. I like his physicality when he's in the game. He's a great tackler. Right. He's a dog.
Sticks his nose.
Well, he sticks his nose in there. There's a lot of good things about J.C. Horn. I don't know if they're $100 million good.
But let me ask you this question, because this is one of the things that drives me crazy when it comes to the salary cap in the NFL, really in any sport, NFL in particular, because you do see it being manipulated so much. You see a team like the New Orleans Saints.
When you say manipulated,
meaning that, you know, you'll see a team, and the New Orleans Saints are a perfect example, but it finally came to get them now after about 8 years. But you see a team who, you know, going into the free agent period that might be, you know, at even money or $20 million over the cap. And then you see them sign all these players, and then they manipulate salaries, and they give you, they restructure, and they, Dan Morgan calls it kicking the can down the road, which Brent Tillis, our salary cap guy, doesn't like to do. And that's why, as of yet, Tyler Moton, the right tackle for the Panthers, who's been a very good player, who's owed $31 million this year, they haven't restructured him. They still may. We'll see.
Well, let me explain what you're saying, because I'll
forget it.
Yeah.
The thing with the salary, that's one of the things that I don't understand is, as a fan, right, at the end of the day, why does a fan care what they pay a player? When you should just be happy you got the player, and as long as you trust the guys in the front office to maneuver around the salary cap the way they can, you want to keep your good players. I mean, right? So the Panthers on a defense, which, I mean, if I asked you right now on the Panthers defense, you know, who's a keeper, you're going to say Derek Brown.
What I would say is that everybody on that last year's defense is expendable. That's what I would say. I said, if you're going to keep anybody, it would be Derek Brown and probably most likely J.C. Horn. Everybody else on the defense is trade bait, is an expendable, is still fighting. They're in pencil, you know, going into this season, regardless of how many games you played last
okay,
year.
So
there's nobody on that defense that is better than the next best guy. They're just guys. We used to call them Jags. Just another guy.
Yep.
They got a team full of Jags. They were the worst defense in the history of the NFL.
So I agree with you. So my point is, when you have a defense that was the worst in the history of the NFL, and that we both agree the only two guys that are
maybe
Derek Brown and J.C. Horn, and you keep talking about, you know, to get to a championship level, every team that we can talk about, and the Eagles would be a great example. To get to that level, what you have to do is make sure you keep your guys that you draft that are players, and the Eagles are, and you bring up Saquon Barkley, and that's a great analogy. You keep your guy, you draft well, and you keep the guys you draft, and then you maintain your salary cap to where it gives you the luxury to go get a Saquon Barkley, which is exactly what they did. They would not have been able to do that if they didn't have seven starters on defense they drafted.
The Philadelphia Eagles are the golden child of how to do it. So are the Kansas City Chiefs. You asked
Buffalo
the
Bills.
There's another good example. You asked the question a while back, kicking the can down the road, right? Just a couple of minutes ago, right? You just asked the question, kicking the can down the road, right? And why do teams do that? Why do teams kick the can down the road?
Well, again,
I know why
they kick. Well, here's why. Two reasons. And the Saints again are $50 million over the cap. Okay, now.
Why? I'm not talking about now. Why did they do that?
Because it's like what's the old phrase? Paying the devil. You're trying to be competitive every year. Well, and so eventually though,
why were they trying? They weren't just doing it out of because they felt like
they were
doing it
because they were trying to build a team to win a championship.
No, they did it because they had Drew Brees, a guy that they felt that could win a championship. They're not doing that when they don't have those guys. When you have a window of opportunity to go out there and kick the can down the road so you can get those guys in, that's what you do. And eventually, you're right, you're going to have to pay the piper. Eventually, every team's going to have to pay the piper. But you take that risk when you have a Pro Bowl quarterback. The reason why they did it with the Buffalo Bills is because they have the highest paid quarterback, and they have the offensive player of the year. So they're going to take those opportunities to say, this is our window to go find and spend money. And eventually, if it doesn't work out, you know what? We're going to pay the piper later. We know that we're going to have to restructure, rebuild and recut. And that's what Tom Brady was, why what he was doing was so incredible, because they never really brought those guys. They never kicked the can down the road. Right. They never did it because they found Wes Welkers and they found other guys, and Tom Brady made those guys better. Some teams have to kick the can down the road because Josh Allen's a good player, but he ain't Tom Brady. Right. He can win championships. They got to go get those guys.
Okay.
So that's why you kick the can down the road, is when you have that quarterback in place and you have that team that you feel like is going to be there. That's why the San Francisco 49ers overpaid for Christian McCaffrey so they could kick the can down the road. They don't have the quarterback they thought they did. And they went to the championship 2 out of 4 years or whatever it was, you know, with the Niners, but they couldn't beat, you know, the teams that they're playing.
But here's the issue I have with that. To get to the point where you can have the luxury of signing a guy or two, or you know, the flexibility, wherever it is, you have to be able to draft well. And then when you draft well, keep those guys.
Yep.
J.C. Horn. And listen, by the way, the Panthers in the last 5-6 years have not had many good draft choices. Derrick Brown being one, they gave him a new deal last year. J.C. Horn's being one, they got to keep him, because you have to build your team to put yourself in a position to win. They do have a quarterback they think they can win with, and Bryce Young in the last 10 games last year showed us he can play. They've got an offense now that appears to be at least a decent offense that they're going to add some playmakers to this year. Defense is the side. You can't let a guy you drafted who was just a Pro Bowler this year go. And if otherwise, then what are you building around? Rasul Douglas? So I think they had to keep him. With that being said, I know this is a guy that you and I both talked about. I think you brought him up on Friday. Mm-hmm. It does look like the Panthers are finalizing a deal with defensive tackle Milton Williams from the Philadelphia Eagles.
Who's one of the top free agent defensive tackles. One of the things that we said we would be very happy going into the draft if we found a guy. Now here's the question, right? Because I think we all want to win. Are we ready to win with Bryce Young yet? We have a window of opportunity because he's still on his first contract. Mm-hmm. And that's when that window usually exists. You get that young quarterback into his third or fourth or fifth year, not making the hundreds of millions and the $300 and $400 million that Josh Allen and Mahomes and those guys are making, because now those guys have to make everybody better. You still have an opportunity to pay these other guys, because everybody gets allocated a number in the cap, right? If let's say you have $500 million, the offensive line's going to get 100 of that. The defensive line's going to get 100 of that. Cornerbacks can get 100, whatever it might be. And the quarterback isn't going to get the lion's share, right? So what happens now is that when you don't have to pay your quarterback, you can go out and sign some of these other guys. And that's where the Panthers are at in that position right now, where they can build strength around, you know, their quarterback, because he's on a rookie deal.
Well, but here's the other thing. The Bills, who have sizzled out to the Chiefs every year, it seems, the last few years in the playoffs, right? And so Josh Allen hasn't won the big game yet, hasn't been in the big game yet, was the MVP this year, just signed a huge, you know, $350 mm-hmm. million contract.
So they're going to kick the can down the road to go get somebody.
Well, let me finish. Just before they re-signed Josh Allen, they also re-signed 4 other players to huge contracts.
Mm-hmm. They're kicking the can down the road.
That's not necessarily true.
They're well over the cap.
I don't know the answer to that yet. But again, who knows? Today's the first day, really, in free agency, and there's guys that will still be cut. For instance, the Panthers. Mm-hmm. We talked about this earlier. You got to believe that Miles Sanders will be a cap casualty, and there's several other guys on the Panthers team.
Yeah, we don't know those. We don't know the inner workings of what those guys are thinking inside the war room for the Panthers. We're going to let this guy go. He's going to save us here.
Right.
We already have those numbers in mind. As soon as we go get our guy, because this is not even finalized yet, they're working to deal with that. Yep. Once he signs, now you can take action and go in and let those other guys go.
Or when you're negotiating.
Because people are kept a lot of times as insurance policies in case this doesn't happen.
Right. And also, you know, the guys that they could let go right now, Miles Sanders being the main one, I guess. If you're in a negotiation, let's say Dre Greenlaw, the linebacker from San Francisco 49ers, who the Panthers are tied to, mm-hmm. just a beast of a linebacker.
He's fast. He's athletic. He's a good player.
Missed most last year with an Achilles, but he's back.
Well, he missed the Super Bowl. He played most of the last year and then got hurt again.
Yeah, right? This past year, he missed most of the year. But the two previous years, 120 tackles plus. I mean, just a really good player.
He got hurt running out of the field on the Super Bowl from the sideline. But anyway, go ahead.
No, exactly. Yeah. But he's a guy the Panthers are tied to. And so if you're negotiating.
Good player.
Great player. And if you're negotiating with him and you go, you know what, we still have this money for, we want this. If we let Miles go, that saves us $3 million. So like you said, it's part of a puzzle that happens throughout and that's why.
Well, let me give you a scenario on this. And I can tell you exactly how it works. I was a part of it, right? With my contract in particular, going back to
what's your contracts look like this?
I get mad at my parents all the time for having me 10, 15 years too early.
No doubt.
Let's say, for example, in year 2000, okay, I'm a free agent. The Panthers want to sign me. They bring me into George Seifert's office, say, hey, listen, Garcia, we're going to sign you. Get your agent to come start talking with us. In mind, they had a linebacker from the Dallas Cowboys, Dexter Coakley, mm-hmm. who they really wanted on this team. And back then, the contracts aren't nearly what they were now. They wanted to sign him to a long-term deal. Mm-hmm. They had an agreement, just like they're doing now. They had an agreement. Hey, you're going to come here. You know, Garcia start talking. We're going to, you know, we had this deal worked out. Guess what happened with him? His wife didn't like Charlotte. His wife wanted to stay in Dallas. His wife and family wanted to stay there. Dexter said, you know what? I'm not coming. So what did that do for the Panthers? They had all their marbles, or at least they thought that they were going to put all a lot of their marbles within that contract for Dexter Coakley, mm-hmm. and I was going to be the leftover piece. I was one of the priorities in free agency. When Dexter Coakley didn't come here, that gave them all sorts of flexibility with numbers. They could go get something else.
Yep.
You know what they decided to do? Go get Jeff Mitchell. He was the number one center from the Ravens, coming off of a Super Bowl win, mm-hmm. was a Pro Bowler. And they said, you know what? We're going to upgrade that position, which is me, which is fine. You know, it happens all the time.
Yep.
You know, he was younger by a couple of several years, and he was a good player. Jeff Mitchell's a very good football player.
Yep.
You know, they ended up going to a couple Super Bowls with him. He's a good football player. So I didn't have any say in that, but what they did with those numbers is they leveraged that. They kept me for an insurance policy in case they signed Dexter Coakley. They couldn't go spend all that money on another center, but as soon as Dexter Coakley's gone, now they can go spend.
Yep.
The same thing is applying with Miles Sanders and a lot of these other players that are kind of sitting there, you know, with caps, like cap numbers are going to be pretty big and the potential to sign. I mean, if they signed J.C. Horn, well, you know what? That was a priority. They wanted to sign him before he became a true free agent. They could have also franchised him, which was another opportunity they could have done, yep. and paid less money than what they have done now, right? Was another chance what they could have done, because he set the market. And that's the things that I think we forget as fans sometimes. You don't just have to go out and pay a guy 4 years, $100 million. To leverage players as well, where you can get a deal done and see if he's going to be healthy. You don't just have to go out there and pay him. You could have franchised him, right? All that number goes to the front of the cap,
right.
but he would have been the top five, average of top five guys. And you say, okay, let's work a deal. Let's get a deal done with you over the long term. And you know what? You come to these agreements if you stay healthy. If not, you know, I still get a really good player for 1 year. Mm-hmm. Right. And I could use that for him in particular. He would have been a better franchise tag player than signing a 4 year deal because of the injuries.
Well, they wouldn't have been a franchise tag until after next year.
Okay.
So you've got a risk.
So
there.
We don't have any risk.
We have a risk from the standpoint of, you know, if now at least if he has another great year, the cornerback market.
Now I can justify it.
But if he has a great year and they don't have him sign, now the price has gone up again.
Okay.
Well, now you're costing yourself more money. But let me give you an analogy real quick. If the Panthers do finish this deal with Milton Williams, which it says they're finalizing now, so you got hopefully they do. And a great example about what you just said with you and Jeff Mitchell is, mm-hmm. Shai Tuttle is a defensive tackle on the Panthers. He had a bad year last year.
Who?
He was a free agent they signed a couple years ago.
I know.
And you know, and a lot of people have wondered why they haven't let him go yet, because it does save maybe $2-3 million. They could have been keeping him as a safety.
Yeah, they could have. They absolutely have been until they do what? I can give you another example.
But I would think you will see Chateau getting released.
I can give you another example. When I went to the Arizona Cardinals, same type of thing. I'm sitting there on the team, make the roster, et cetera, et cetera. They draft two young centers. What does that mean for me? Yeah. What do you say? Oh, damn. They just drafted my replacement.
Yeah.
Second round, right? Kid from Ohio State. Good player. Didn't play very long, but you know, another kid from Kansas, mm-hmm. or Kansas State. What did they do with me? Thanks, Frank, for your services. We have two young players. We're going a different direction.
Yep.
Right. That's what happens all the time. People are put on reserve when we don't know about those things that are happening as fans. We think, okay, well, they just cut this guy, so this guy's the next starter. He has to move in. He's still a pretty good player. Mm-hmm. No, we're going a different direction. We're going to go with this young quarterback. You know, Josh McCown, he's a young player. We're going to give him a chance to cut his teeth. So we might as well just go ahead and revamp the entire offense and the entire team and go young. Larry Fitzgerald and Quan Bolden, mm-hmm. we got some young players. We're going to grow him with Josh McCown and let these young players go out there and fail together, right? So that eventually in 2 or 3 years, if Josh comes up or we go out and get another player, they're going to have the pieces in place to go get a bell cow guy like Kurt Warner that comes in now, throws to Fitzgerald, Bolden, and Breston, and goes to a Super Bowl and is one play away from winning the entire thing.
Yep. And, you know, look, the Panthers, you know, have so many holes on defense. We've talked about it. we would all probably agree that defensive tackle would be number one. I mean, the worst run defense in the history of the NFL.
It's where it starts. You got to start up the middle.
Exactly. So, you know, now where do they move? And
you can't spend all this money in free agency, continue to do that.
But that's what I'm saying is you have to trust. Again, we don't know what the deal is. We don't know how it's crafted.
It's going to be a big deal for the defensive tackle.
It is, but it's
going to be northwards of $100 million.
I don't think it'll be that much.
5 years, 100. I'd say five years. I would say 5 years, 20, 100, 125 million.
I think it'll probably be closer to a 3 year deal. But
No.
But we'll see.
We'll see.
We can argue all we want until we see it.
It's going to be a 4 or 5 year deal. I guarantee it.
But they're going to,
it's not going to be a 3 year deal.
All right. We'll see. Regardless, 3 or 5 years, regardless, they're not done signing free agents. Not going to the bargain basement either. You keep saying they can't sign another big free agent. And this is where this was back to my original point about fans worrying about the salary cap. If they go sign, let's just say a Greenlaw, I would bet you right now they're going to sign one of those top three safeties. Now, there's tier two safeties that I think, like a Justin Reed, there are good ones. I think they are going to sign one of those top three. And those guys are going to get 16 to 20 million a year, period. So
we're going to have our entire cap tied up in three guys.
As a fan, it always drives me crazy. Why didn't the fan just go, man, we just got Milt Williams. We just got this guy. We just got that. Let the guys that worry about the cap worry about the cap. And let's find out what we know. If we find, I mean, as we just said, the cap is a revolving door sometimes. I trust that Brant Tillis, who was well-recognized around the NFL, is one of the best doing when it comes to keeping flexibility with a salary cap. He did it in Kansas City, and guess what? Kansas City has a hell of a lot more good players on it than we do by far, yet he managed to continue to bring in good players, stay with have cap flexibility. So I'm trusting he'll do that. So if we sign a top safety, if we sign Greenlaw at middle linebacker, if we sign Williams at defensive tackle, and whoever else we may sign, obviously you're going to have to find some bargain basement guys too. Every good team has some of those guys that you find. Find, you know, 1 year deal or 2 year deal for guys that you know you're not having to break the bank for. But let's see what happens. But in the meantime, as we sign these guys, enjoy it and trust that Brant Tillis is going to do what he's brought here to do, which is to not put us in salary cap jail.
What would give you any confidence in anything the Panthers do? And as a fan, tell us not to be concerned or worried when we haven't had back to back winning seasons in the history of this team.
Well, here's why.
So all of a sudden, we're supposed to just blindly trust everybody and not question anything?
Blindly trusting is completely ridiculous. I'm trusting that a guy, like I said, in Brant Tillis, who
we don't know anything about.
Yes, we do. We
not here?
Well, we know what his track record was at Kansas City. And so when you hire a guy, and like when you hire anybody in any business, you hire somebody.
Is that because of him or is that because of Patrick Mahomes?
Well, I mean, where did Patrick Mahomes come from? That front office moved up in the draft to get him.
Okay.
So, I mean, Kansas City has been.
But he's a cap guy. He's not a draft guy. He's not a talent evaluator. He's a numbers guy.
He's a numbers guy, but he's part of that. Dan Morgan includes him and Coach Canales as part of the team that are involved in all the decisions on the path.
So you keep giving him all the credit.
I'm just saying.
He's not even making the pick. Dan Morgan and Canales are.
What is the pick? What I'm saying is what they decide to pay a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trusting that a dude that has shown he's been able to do it to do it. I'm trusting him. Now, whether he does or not, who knows?
All he has to do is add and subtract.
No, that's not that easy. If it's that easy, then you wouldn't have a lot of these teams that have no money on the salary cap. Like, I'll give you another example, the Dallas Cowboys. Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, they now are having to maneuver. There's rumors
they overpaid for their quarterback. He wasn't the guy they thought.
Well, they've had to pay a lot of guys. Now, the other part of that, too, is this. When you have success in the draft, eventually you're going to have to let some of these good guys go. And you got to be in position to and again, right now there's rumors that Dallas may have to trade Micah Parsons because they don't have the money to pay him. Arguably the best defensive end in football. And you see what Max Crosby just got. You see what Myles Garrett just got.
And what makes you think Milton's not going to get any, you know, I mean, he's not a defensive end, but he's a D tackle. But he's going to sign those type of deals for his position because he's the hottest free agent out there.
But
he is going to set the market.
Listen, Milton Williams is a good defensive tackle.
He is going to set
the third best defensive tackle on his defensive tackle line.
That doesn't matter. I'm telling you, it doesn't matter. I'm telling you what matters more is timing and free agency. It is a lot of things when it comes to making money as a free agent in the NFL. Luck is a big part of that.
100%.
But he's falling into a position right now where he's the hottest commodity as the defensive tackle. He's the number one rated defensive tackle in the NFL, and he's going to get paid the lion's share because of that, regardless of what he did, comparatively speaking, to the two guys on his team.
He's at, the Panthers have come to an agreement with him now, so it is a deal. There's still no information on what kind of contract he signed, the years or the amount, but they did sign him. So regardless of...
I still don't understand that.
Understand what?
How you can sign him with when he's not even be the... I mean, the period hasn't even opened yet.
They agree to a deal, and then they announce it. That's what I'm saying. It's okay. The stupidest.
It's just word throw.
Yeah, like Josh, even the guys that signed free agency that were their own guys, like Josh Allen, these guys, I mean, they haven't necessarily signed the deal. J.C. Horn, no, J.C. Horn may have signed today. I don't know, but there's a deal right there. 82 million, no, that's more. That's the left tackle, sorry.
That's for the Titans.
Yeah, so we'll see what he gets, but I'm glad they got him.
He's going to get over $20 million a year.
I said I think he'll probably get a 3-year deal, probably between 60 and 80 million. I don't think they give him 100 million. No, I think he's going to be a very good signing at a reasonable price. Do they have to overpay? That remains to be seen. I mean, we'll see. But regardless, I'm excited because that was a huge need on this team. And if Derrick Brown comes back healthy, you have him, then you have Deshaun Robinson, who had a very good year as well. Now you've got at least three defensive tackles that you can count on, hopefully, and trust that will help this defense.
See, anytime I read headlines, and I know sometimes they get blown out of proportion and things like that, but when you're talking about historic deals, guess what that means? Overpaying. Those are two same thing. Historic deal, overpay.
Why? I think that's ridiculous too. A historic deal means that you might just got the most money for your position ever, but it also means because just in any job, maybe because that's just the cost of doing business.
You mean the luck that exists when you become free?
No, not, Josh Allen wasn't a free agent. He wasn't a free agent.
He was a MVP.
Okay, but he wasn't a free agent. There was no luck in that. He earned it on the field, and they paid him.
He earned
and guess
that.
Ever at quarterback isn't because he was free agent.
Because he was because the MVP.
Okay, he hadn't won a Super Bowl, hadn't been in one.
He's the MVP.
You just said winning the Super Bowl.
There's a part of that. He's the MVP.
I agree, but my point
Panthers
is.
Panthers haven't been to the playoffs in 5 years.
Doesn't matter. You got to get there.
That doesn't matter.
You have to get there. They're also not giving anybody $350 million. What I'm saying is you have to get there. Mm-hmm. You have to get there. The Bills were bad. They got there. They drafted great. Just Philadelphia Eagles were bad. They drafted great.
When were the Philadelphia Eagles bad?
One year?
No.
Well, I mean, last year they were really bad. They won their first 10 and lost the rest, I believe.
Did they make the playoffs?
Last year, if they did, it was one round and out.
Okay. I mean.
But guess what? Then they had another great draft. And then they signed Saquon Barkley. And bam, there they go. So you have to get to the point where you're competing for that. And guess what? Otherwise, why sign anybody? Why even draft anybody? I mean, hell, you if you're closing the door, you've got to have good drafts, and then you got to sign good free agents. It's a mixture of the both.
I'm not saying don't sign. I'm saying don't overpay for them.
Then I know, but I'm saying that overpaying is in the eye of the beholder. If I need a defensive tackle and you need a defensive tackle, but defensive tackle is number one priority for me from a defense that's been awful, and defensive tackle to you is, man, I think if we add another, like if we trade for a Myles Garrett, man, that's the difference. So we're gonna blah blah blah. It's the eye of the beholder. So I'm going to overpay. If I see a bottle of booze, if I see a bottle of bourbon and I'm a bourbon collector and you like bourbon, I may overpay for it because it might mean something more to me than it does to you. And so in this case, and again, we have no idea if they've overpaid for Williams at all.
I'm talking about
J.C. Horn. Yeah. And J.C. Horn is getting basically, you know, $1 million more a year than Patrick Surtain, who was in the same draft as J.C. Horn, has had great 3 years and has been on the field. And now what's going to happen is J.C. Horn's deal is going to be historic for probably, you know, not long, because you got guys like Sauce Gardner and guys like that that are going to blow by that. And that's just the NFL. The salary cap keeps going up so much in the NFL because business is great. So I think that as a fan, let the teams figure it out. Hope that you got a guy that can figure it out. Hope that, it's not somebody like the Saints, who really did make a bunch of mistakes along the way with salary cap, and now they're going to have to pay for it for several years. I mean, I think they just gave Derek Carr, their quarterback, who was owed, I think, $35 million. They just gave him a ton of money up front to restructure his deal to, you know, kind of kick the can down the road again, I guess. And they're not close to winning the division, much less anything else. Whereas I think if you're a Panther fan, I think it's reasonable to think that if they make the right moves in free agency, and if they have another good draft, or let's just say a good draft, the Panthers could contend to win the division this year. I think everyone would think that. the Saints certainly don't scare you. The Falcons don't scare you. And Tampa Bay is good. I mean, they're definitely the best, but Mike Evans is another year older. Chris Godwin, who just resigned.
Atlanta doesn't scare you now that they got all this money?
Well, let's see what they do. I mean, you know, but they don't, they have a quarterback too that's played three games and he looks good, by the way. I'm not saying, I think Penix Jr. is going to be a good quarterback, but nonetheless, he's played started three or four or five games, whatever it is. Their Falcons defense has a hole, you know, a lot of holes in it, as does the Panthers.
What was that? What was the record against the Panthers last year?
They always have our number. I'm not, but so you're telling me that you don't think the Panthers have a chance to win the division next year if they have a good offseason?
Yeah, I mean,
they've got a shot.
They have a shot every year.
Did they have a shot to win the division? I don't know. This past year, you didn't think they had a chance, did you? I didn't.
No, they didn't at all.
This upcoming season, you don't think they showed enough growth that if they have a good free agency and a good draft that they could win?
It depends on what Atlanta does. You're assuming that Atlanta's not going to have a free agency and a good draft period.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that regardless
if everything is equal, and let's say the Philadelphia or the Atlanta Falcons go out and have a free agent signing. They sign one of their guys that they think is the next J.C. Horn. Exactly. And you don't think those fans are going to say, okay, we're still better than the Panthers?
I don't care what their fans say. What I'm talking about is the Panthers, and I'm thinking that the Panthers are in a position where we saw growth as the year got longer last year.
And we still lost to the Falcons.
I don't care what they did against the Falcons. Mm-hmm. They almost had Tampa Bay beat. It was a bad call that cost them that, and they should have won that game. And so
I almost won my bet the other day too, but I mean, didn't.
My point is the Panthers showed growth. You know, I think Bryce Young, who showed growth at the end of that year, is going to take another big step this year. I think you've got, Chuba Hubbard showed growth last year, had a great year and got a new contract. I think the team Penix is in a position.
Is Penix getting any better?
Of course he is. That's what I'm saying. I think he's going to be good.
So who's going to get better?
My point is, that you don't know, but what I'm not worried about the other teams. I'm saying you just want to talk about things that.
No, my question is that how much better and at what rate are we going to improve over what the Falcons do? Why are we all of a sudden, because we go get a free agent and we sign another guy that we just had, what is going to stand out where we separate ourselves so that we've shown growth? Is it going to be Bryce Young getting better than Penix Jr.? Maybe. We don't know that yet.
There's a lot of factors, and it's not just the Falcons. It's Tampa Bay. I mean, Tampa Bay was in the playoffs, and so they're going to get better. Mm-hmm. I think the Panthers, though, have a blueprint that showed growth last year. Mm-hmm. They have a head coach that showed growth last year, and they have a general manager who seems to at least be on the right path. We haven't been able to say that in a long time. I'm saying that.
How many of those players caught passes or threw touchdowns? The ones that you just mentioned. The head coach and the general manager.
You can't, according to you, the Panthers should just quit.
No, that's not what I said.
Yeah, they should just quit.
It's not what I said
at all. Because guess what? How many touchdown passes did you throw? How many touchdown passes did Myles Garrett throw? How many touchdown passes?
What does that have to do?
Trying to make it all sound about the quarterback. Who knows?
There's a lot to do with the quarterback.
Of course it is. And guess what? I think Bryce Young showed last year at the last eight games of the year when he was a top 10 ranked quarterback that there's.
So that's your answer then. No. Bryce Young.
But no, it's not. He's not the only reason. You can have a great quarterback and still stink. Mm. Is that not true?
Yeah, I mean, you can. Yeah.
Of course. I mean, so my point is they showed enough growth, mainly on the offensive side of the ball, that as a Panther fan or just as a person who watches the NFL and has knowledge, that if they have a good offseason, if they fix this defense, there's a chance that they could fight for a division. Their division is not.
The NFL has done a great job. They've done a really good job of indoctrinating us as fans to believe that every year that we're going to have a chance to win the Super Bowl. What they forget.
I didn't mention the Super Bowl. I said maybe win the division.
To win the division every year. And you know what? That's what's so great about the NFL, right? Is the best team picks for. We have to draft better than what the Falcons do. That's where we can show growth, right? We can show growth. We can beat them in that. We can draft better than they can.
That's why I said it. I think I've said it six times. If the Panthers have a good offseason, if they fill holes with free agency and a draft and have a good draft, there's a chance that they could win the division. You could say that about the Falcons, too. You could say that about Tampa Bay. Yep. But I think you couldn't have said that last year. So the fact that we move in a year forward and we show some growth, if we have another good offseason, then I think the fact that the Panthers showed that growth.
You didn't think the Panthers had any chance going into last year that we were going to do that we were going to win 7-8 games?
I think if I'm not mistaken, the over-under for Panthers
it was five. It was five games.
I bet under.
Okay.
And now I will say this about last year.
What do you think it's going to be this year?
Probably between 5 and 6, right? I mean, they're not going to jump it up exponentially. I mean, it's not going to go too high. Now, I'll go over this year. I think they're going to, I think that they, again, let's see what they finish. The painting is not even close to being finished.
Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
And so, but what I'm saying to you,
we don't know yet.
We don't. But what I'm saying is if they have a good fit, Milton Williams is a good start. And if they add a safety, that's another good piece. And if they add a linebacker or whoever else they line, you know, Isaiah Rodgers is a DB out of Philadelphia who I think they're going to go after.
And my comeback would be, how much better is the guys Milton Williams and J.C. Horn, who's already been on our team? Did we get better or did we just stay the same with him? We got him for longer. If he improves, then we're going to get better. We can look at the Atlanta Falcons and as a fan, let's say we were fans of the Atlanta Falcons, we'd be saying the same thing about them.
Of course, but that's not the argument. The argument at all.
How much better is what Milton Williams means for the Panthers, right? Is he going to be a difference maker? Is he going to be an X factor? Is he going to be a guy that goes out there and stands out and says, okay, now that we'll be able to stop the run, but the Falcons are going to go address their concerns and their needs as well.
As is any NFL.
That's right.
But I'm not worried about what the other NFL, because the Panthers know, they know much more than you and I know. They know what they think they've got to do to put themselves in position to contend for the division next year. And let's forget the Super Bowl. Let's start with the division. Okay. As every team will tell you, you got to win that first. And Milton Williams, you don't have to be in the Panthers organization to know that defensive tackle was a huge need.
100%.
And we all know, I think one thing we'll agree on is that Milton Williams is definitely a big step up than Shy Tuttle.
Yes. Okay. Agree.
So if we're just going to go on the first free agent,
we got better there.
It's better. Now, J.C. Horn, I'm not even going to count yet because he's our own guy. So we had him last year.
We stayed the same.
Maybe he doesn't prove, but whatever. And hopefully he does improve. You know, if he stays on the field is an improvement.
If he stays healthy,
yep,
and he continues to grow, and he continues to get better, then guess what? We've gotten a little bit better incrementally there.
Morgan, at the end of each day during this time period, and if you're Canales and Brant Tillis, I think that's probably the question you would ask yourself is, okay, did we get better today? And as of right now, if they make no other moves today,
the answer is yes for the Panthers.
Better.
100%.
Now, tomorrow, what do they do? Maybe they do nothing tomorrow, or maybe they cut a couple guys to save some money. But that's the question you have to – eventually – the only way we'll know is when they start playing with real bullets, right? Mm-hmm. So we won't know. But on paper, Milton Williams was a doggone good defensive tackle for the Eagles, had a huge Super Bowl for the Eagles. And so, you know, like you said, he was arguably the number one defensive tackle on free agency.
He was the number one free agent tackle.
And
we got him.
And so now Dan Morgan,
depending on what we pay for him.
Well, again, I'm not worried about what they pay with him because I'm going to trust. You know what I worry about what they pay for him is if in 3-4 years, we're having to cut everybody and we're going to be the New Orleans Saints. Hopefully, Brant Tillis, and again, I go off his track record with Kansas City, which has been...
When you have to overpay, when you continue, and that's what I'm trying to explain. When you continue to have to overpay for free agents in the free agent market, you're not going to get the value. You have to get value within the draft. You have to get value with your quarterback on a rookie contract. That's where you're going to start finding value where you can go. We still have the luxury to be able to do that. So do the Falcons. Falcons have the same luxury. Penix Jr. actually has 1 year less than what Bryce does. So they have even more, they have a longer period to have that luxury. It's going to depend on if Penix Jr. grows and how much Bryce continues to grow, because we don't know yet for sure with Bryce. We hope that he does.
Yeah, I mean, the Falcons don't know about Penix. We don't know about Bryce.
No, we don't. Neither one of them, because they're young players.
They both look like they could be good.
And obviously,
Bryce has a longer track record. Some of it good, some of it bad.
Right. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean,
the last 8 games, good. Before that, not
right.
Good.
So who is he?
But what I have said is that free agency, the draft is where you build your team. Every NFL guru, every GM will tell you, if you don't draft well, you're done.
That's where your foundation starts.
And so
I think we have a start to a good foundation on the offensive side with what they did in free agency, bringing some mid-tier guys. So they have a good start to the foundation. I think they solidified that a little bit more with what they did. You know, it's no longer, you know, the sand. They put a little concrete on there now with getting Milton, to come here. Now they got to go find the rest of that foundation so they can solidify it to start building their house.
Right. And, you know, Dan Morgan talking about going off somebody's track record, you know, last year, Dan Morgan had, you know, going into last year, we had the worst offensive line in the NFL.
One of them.
So it was the last or second to last. What'd he do?
Oh, in the NFL, yes.
In the NFL. So last year, he signs two guards
who
were very good.
Made some moves.
And you could say that they, you know, some people say that they might even overpaid those guys a little bit. Maybe they did. Well, one of them went to the Pro Bowl, and then the other one, could have. I mean, they played great on a rebuilt offensive line.
Wait, our running game was a bigger impact last year, which helped Bryce.
Because of those two guards.
Because of the interior of the offensive line was solidified. And it didn't put as much pressure on our left tackle, in my opinion, is an opportunity for us to really grow, right? He has a lot of upside, a lot of potential, very good athlete.
Yep.
We have a lot of potential to grow there more than any other team because he's a young player that's coming into his fourth year, and has some experience now and has some help around him. So that's a really good opportunity for the Panthers to get better. No doubt.
And he had a good year. And then having those two guards that Dan signed, I'm sure helped in that. So now you look at Dan's track record from his first year. Now you go, okay, he has to replicate that on defense. So now he went out and signed the number one free agent defensive tackle. Hopefully he has the same success with him.
He didn't do that with the offensive line, though.
He did. He signed two guards.
He didn't sign the hot commodities and overpay for them. He found mid-tier guys.
They weren't mid-tier. They were two of the top four offensive guards in free agency last year. And some people did say that he may have overpaid, but it was such a need for this team and that they are both really good guards that he had to do it because he needed guards. You couldn't go back out there and put Bryce Young where he's running for his life every two
seconds. So at what point do we start kicking the can down the road? Because eventually these contracts may not start coming up.
That's what I'm saying. We don't know if they will, because guess what? What if they have another great last year's draft? Let's see. They have some players that look like they can play. They had some that didn't. If they have, they have nine draft choices as of right now this year. If they have a really good draft, like the Philadelphia Eagles have been doing, then you don't have to, because you've got your own good guys under these, like you said, rookie contracts for 2 or 3 years. And then you can decide which ones you keep, which ones you don't, what holes you fill with free agency. So that's what I'm saying is he fixed the offensive line last year. Milton, the defensive line is certainly not fixed yet, but that's a heck of a start. They still are going to need a pass rush, right? There's no doubt there'll be an edge somewhere, whether it be draft, and most people have us taking that with the first pick in the draft, some type of edge player. They've got to get better at linebacker, and they got to get better at safety. That's why I think that if they make any other signing today, and I think they will, I think it's going to be one of the three safeties, possibly Greenlaw at linebacker. Other than him, I don't know. But safeties, I think, is a huge thing for this team, or a huge need for this team. I think that you will see them go after one of those guys today. And I think those safeties, by the way, I think will get $16 to $20 million a year. And we'll see.
Well, let me give you an answer to the question I was asking you earlier, because I know what the answer is. And I was seeing if you did. And the answer is the way you get better and where you separate yourself from one team to the next is not in free agency. Because everybody has a chance to go out and sign for. Hold on. It's not free agency. It's through the draft and the back part of the draft, the middle part of the draft, where you get the Cooper DeJeans, where you get the Chad.
DeJeans the first.
Okay, where you get the Steve Smiths, where you get the Chad Kotas.
Yeah.
That's where you're going to separate yourself from everybody else that is doing the same exact thing, that has the same exact opportunity to do exactly what you just did. And they're all growing incrementally. That's where you're going to separate yourself, is through the draft.
I've said that from the beginning of this conversation. I said it's through the draft. And if you look at teams like Philadelphia and Kansas City, when you are successful in the draft, it allows you then to spend money in free agency to fill holes that you need to fill. And it remains to be seen if the Panthers are going to be good.
My point to that is that we are still a year away from that because we haven't done well in the draft.
Well,
that's why we're picking last. And that's why we're picking first top eight.
Eighth.
Right? Because we haven't done well in the draft.
Yeah, the Panthers over the course
of their that's why we've had the historically worst defense in the NFL. One of the worst defenses to ever play.
But what I said from the beginning of the conversation was that is where you build your team in the draft. It remains to be seen.
My point is we're doing it backwards.
You still can't sit there. I don't think you are doing it backwards. Again, they have nine draft choices this year. Nine. So you're including a top 10 draft choice, including a later second round, 2 third round picks. So and I'm sure they will maneuver some of that around, but they have nine draft choices. So right now what they're doing is going, we're going to get this free agent here. We got some money. We're going to fill this. The rest of it, we're going to use to fill other holes and to create depth and competition. That's what they will do. Now, the Panthers, over the course of their, let's just say the last 20 years, which has been a lot of Marty Herney, and then, you know, what's
George Seifert,
Fitterman, GM. So you have Herney.
Gettleman.
Fitterman. The Panthers have been a very
Fitterman
bad.
Fitterman was awful.
They've been a very bad team in those middle rounds you're referring to. I think I looked at
guess who Dan Morgan learned under?
Well, no, he learned under
Fetterman.
Fetterman was part of that team. Fetterman wasn't the main GM there. I mean, their main GM guy's still there, who's brilliant.
He was
so,
there.
So we'll, and again, you know, just because you learn on somebody doesn't mean that you're the same as them. So
that's true.
But the Panthers have been bad in mid rounds. I mean, second, third round, they've been horrible throughout the last 20 years. This past year with Dan Morgan, you take Brooks, the running back out of Texas, in the second round, which a lot of people thought was nuts because he was coming off ACL. And guess what? We don't know if Brooks will ever be good, but we know he's not playing next year. So you have to chalk that up to a miss as of today.
Do you know who was good before that? The best that the Panthers have ever had?
In what round?
In the middle to late rounds? Bill Polian. Bill Polian, oh, yeah, when he was here. And then
he's a Hall of Famer.
And then, you know, I mean, Marty Herney's first couple years, he did a good job.
Marty was really good in the first round.
He was first three rounds. He did a really good job. He had some really good players. Well, he struggled with fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round. You know, when Brandon Bean was here before he went to the Bills, he helped out with that. He was the talent evaluator. But
I think Marty's last 3 years here, I think he whipped.
He did not do very good. Second, third. He did not very good.
He hit his first round picks. Yeah. So, you know, the draft is, I've said that from day one, that is where you have to build. But when you have a team, when you have nine picks coming up and you have some free agency money, you have to fill holes. He did it on offense last year. And let me just make this other point. He did the same thing last year that we think he's going to do now, which is fill holes using his free agency money. He did that and still was in a position this year where he came into free agency with $50 million. So there was no kicking the can down the road. It's because Brant Tillis is maneuvering that money around to where you're never going to be in a position where you don't have the flexibility to do something. That's why if the Panthers wanted to restructure Taylor Moten, that's $31 million that he's getting this year. And they haven't done it. And they're still spending this money.
Because they're giving it to all these other guys.
But my point is, if they wanted to have more money to go sign another two, three free agents, they could just restructure Taylor Moten to, you know, extend him and save $31 million or whatever the case
may be. Well, they're not going to save all of that but money.
Okay, let's just save 50. My point is,
they're not even going to save half of
the that. Fact that they haven't.
They might save $1 or $2 million on
it. No. Moten is a huge number. It's like Grady Jarrett today. The Falcons cut him, and he's been there for 10 years, and they saved $24 million. So Moten would be a huge addition to money this year, and they haven't done it yet. I don't know if they will. They're saying they really would prefer not to. So my point is, when you're in a position to spend money on free agency and you have a guy like that that you could restructure and easily save a bunch of money.
Well, maybe they still may. We don't know.
They might, and they might. And if they do, it'll be interesting to see. Again, until we even know the numbers on any of these guys. But my point is, the track record he has and what he's done so far leads you to believe that these, you know, folks that are so worried about overpaying should settle down, enjoy these players, hope that they win. And then if we ever get to a point where, you know, we're 50 million over the cap, like the Saints or whoever the case may be, you know, listen, the best case to be in is draft well and then be the Philadelphia Eagles. You think the Philadelphia Eagles wanted to lose Milton Williams? Heck no.
They got
another young kid that'll slide right in.
Let me ask you a question with Milton Williams.
Josh Sweat, by the way, is the defensive end who's afraid that Philadelphia drafted, who's available. So, I mean, they're losing some guys, but they plug and play because they draft so well.
That's what happens every time, every year when you have a Super Bowl winning team, caliber team. Guess who's going to come handpick them because they think that they're going to be the ones that are saviors for their team. And, you know, there's some value to that. I mean, there's some value to that. The problem is when you have to overpay for these guys, right? That's what comes back to bite you in the ass and why you start kicking the can down the road, because you've overpaid for a guy that's not going to give you as much value coming off of a Super Bowl team with everybody good around them. It's going to be an improvement over what you have, but at what value? Right? Is the number going to outweigh the productivity? But let me ask you a question with Milton Williams.
Yep.
You say a 3-year deal. What is?
I'm just guessing. I have no idea.
Okay. We're all guessing.
I just think we're 26 all guessing. Years old. I don't
we're,
think they're
hold on. We're all guessing.
Yeah.
No, there's not, I'm not holding. But what I'm asking you is at what point, what's the number that you think he's going to get? Because when he blows that out of the water, at what point are we overpaying for him?
I think a fair number for him. And again, I'm not.
You said 3-year deal.
I think probably 3-year, and he'll probably get somewhere between 22 and 25 million, you think?
No. A year?
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, 66?
Yeah, so I think he'll get somewhere between 60 and 80. So I think it'll be somewhere between 25 million a year.
Yeah, I think that's
fair.
But I don't think it's going to be a 3-year deal. I think it's going to be a much longer deal.
But you know this too. Even let's say they go 5 years. You know those.
I mean, it's four. Okay, but what is that? What do those 2 years give you then? Cap space. So you don't have to kick the can down the road.
But
so if you send him to a 5-year deal and you give him $20 million in the first year, whatever the guarantees are. When it comes to that fourth and fifth year, and he's making $35 million, guess what you do? buy. You do. You sign him to a 5-year deal. You give him 3 years, and those are going to be
I think you give him 3 years, and he's
so 26. You just give him. You
JC
give him.
Horn's 23 years old. They just gave him a 4-year deal. Why are you going to give a 26-year-old defensive tackle 5 years?
Because you extend the money. JC Horn. They did him a favor because they didn't have to.
They did him a favor.
He wasn't a free agent.
Correct. The reason they re-signed him is because they know that market's going to continue to go up. And in a year from now, JC Horn, you're going to look at it and go, oh, that's a good deal.
We'll see what happens.
You'll look at it because that's
the Milton's going to be a 4 to 5 year deal. It's going to be probably 80 million plus.
I don't think it'll be five.
It'll be four to five year deal. 80 million
care.
Plus. And those last two years of that contract are going to be back end loaded. Right. And that's the reason why you sign long-term deals. That's the reason why it benefits the team to sign you to a 5-year deal where I can back end load it and save me money on the cap. I'm guessing you know how the cap works, right? I mean,
I've explained it pretty doggone well.
I'm talking about how the cap, the numbers work and how the contract works.
And that's why I think you're not going to give a 26-year-old guy a 5-year deal. I just don't think you will.
No, that's why give him that.
That's how you get into trouble, though.
No, that's not. You cut him when it comes to after his third year, you save money. I save money by cutting him after 3 years. If it comes to those last 2 years, I don't have to pay that.
You're forgetting that the guaranteed money up front is what really counts. And that's why these teams get in trouble.
They diversify, spread that over 5 years versus 3 years.
They just gave JC Horn a guaranteed $70 million out of 100. They just gave Josh Allen $225 million guaranteed on a 300 and whatever. So my point is, the beginning is where these guys are getting their money, and that's why they also just
that's what the players
Derek
want.
Carr.
That's what the players but want.
So it's not having to give him a 5-year deal. Derek Carr from the Saints. The reason they just gave him all that money now up front when they redid his deal was to release the salary cap money and make it better for this year and next year. So no, that's not the case, and that's why I don't think they're going to give a 26-year-old defense. They might.
We'll see.
But my whole point of all of it is, I don't care what they give them. I'm glad they signed them. I will worry about the salary cap when I need to. Right now, we needed a defensive tackle, and they got the number one free agent out there. That makes me happy as a Panther fan. I don't care what they gave them. We'll worry about that down the road if we have to. I trust that Brent Tillis is going to make sure, like he did last year when we signed two great guard free agent signings, and it fixed our offensive line, and we still have $50 million this year to spend as of right now. It could be more.
And in 3 years, you're not going to hold him accountable for, let's say.
Well, of course, if 3 years from now we're talking and we're $60 million under the cap, like the Saints.
Over the cap or under?
Over the cap, excuse me, like the Saints, right. Then yeah, you can sit here and go, DJ, I told you, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think this guy knows how to maneuver the salary cap. I think he's shown it in Kansas City, and I think he'll show it here. I think the biggest unknown of all of this is, can we hit draft choices? And that remains to be seen. Last year, if we do,
it's going to make him look like a genius.
Well, if we do, it's also going to make him look like a genius, because he will be able to plug and play as opposed to have to shotgun approach and just spend money for the sake of spending because you have so many holes. The Philadelphia Eagles, and you're the one that brought this up, and it's a good analogy, the reason they were able to go get Saquon last year was because they had
drafted well.
Playing everywhere.
They drafted extremely well.
To me, that's the unknown. If the Panthers draft well, then I think they're going to be in a really good spot, but we don't know.
And that's been my entire point the entire time. We need to draft well before you go get your bells and whistles. You don't just go pick numbers and throw guys out there and play. It's about being patient sometimes. Sometimes I know we don't want to hear that word because we want to get better. We want to be in the mix and we want to see these numbers. We want to see these guys. Yeah, of course we got better. But is it going to be at the expense of somewhere down the road? I would rather see, let's see what these rookies can do. And if we have some players that can play, right, I'm going to be a little bit more patient with maybe you. Even though we have a rookie, I don't think our quarterback and our offense and our team is ready to compete for a championship. When you are, that's when you go get your big free agents. But it's like living, like I said at the beginning, we live in a trailer right now with our team and we just got some money. Okay, great. We got a lot of money. Let's go buy a yacht. Right. But
if the opposite of that is just continue to suck.
No, that's not what I said.
Yeah, it is.
That's not what I said. No, it's not. That's not what I said.
Then how do you figure things?
Then maybe you didn't hear me correctly. Maybe you didn't hear me correctly.
You're just rolling the same team out next year?
Maybe. No, did I say that?
They're not spending the money just to spend it.
Let me rephrase that.
Under your scenario, their offensive line last year was still
sucked. Let me rephrase that. Let me say it clearer.
You change your point.
No,
times.
I'm not changing my point.
Yes, you have.
I'm not. I'm saying go draft well.
Okay. Well, that's a given. Everyone wants to draft well.
Okay.
Everyone wants
to
draft well.
So do that. And once you do that, and you become the Philadelphia Eagles.
So he's had one draft under his name.
And he's not ready to go out and get these big free agents yet.
What do you, so he said one draft under his name, that they have the worst defense in the history. Now he's trying to fix the defense. He's supposed to just wait, draft nine draft. Defensive players and see if that helps. Lucky if three of them pan out.
That'd be part of it.
Yeah. Guess what the other part is? Filling some holes with free agency.
Okay. Some mid-tier guys.
There's going to be a lot of mid-tier guys, I'm sure. But that's not one of them.
There's probably going to be a couple more big ones. When we're paying this guy like Sean Gilbert money, and he goes out there and he doesn't play well because he doesn't have any pieces around him.
You can say that. He's going to have Derek Brown next to him.
Okay.
One of the best defensive tackles in great. Football.
Also has the worst defense in the NFL come answer.
And if under your scenario, they'd have the worst one this year, too, because you're going to roll out rookies and some mid-tier guys.
We're going to get better because we're going to draft well.
How do you know?
Because
why not fill a few holes and then hope you draft well?
That's why I said you have to be patient. I'm not saying don't fill holes. I'm saying don't overspend.
Fill some holes with some guys that are proven.
I said don't overspend.
Well, we don't know what they spent yet, but at the end of the day, you won't know if they overspent for a year. Last year,
Most of the times when you're buying for number one guys, he's the number one guy in his position. When there's many other teams that are fighting for him, for this guy, many other teams are out there making offers to him. You're going to overpay.
Well, I don't care if they overpay or not.
That's what my experience tells me.
I trust that Brent Tillis has experience maneuvering the salary cap with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think last year we signed two big-time free agents that people said we overpaid for, and we had the best offensive line we'd had in years. It worked, and hopefully he does the same thing.
We won five games. The offensive line worked.
As you said, they weren't ready to win a championship last year either. But guess what? The offensive line showed improvement, as did the offense. This year, fill some holes with some guys you know can play, and then hope you draft well around them, and you take another step. It doesn't happen overnight, but you can't take a step if you continue to roll bums out there. And if you roll mid-tier guys out there, the reason they're mid-tier is because they didn't play
well. Were you going to get better? But drafting well is what I've said a million times.
You have to draft well. That's a given. You have to sign smart free agents. Okay, well, signing the number one defensive tackle.
Is that smart? Overpaying for a guy?
I think if you don't think it's smart, number one, you don't even know they overpaid for him. You have no idea what idea. You don't even know what they paid him.
I'm pretty sure. I'm guessing.
And even if they, year everyone said they overpaid for their two guards.
Did they or didn't they?
No, they didn't. Both of them played great. No, they didn't. 100% they didn't. Okay. The offensive line.
We won five games.
You're going to have an argument for everything because you're wrong.
We won five games. Who am I wrong?
Here's what you do. On paper, you sign your little mid-tier guys, and you do your draft, and I'll sign me a few stud dogs, and I'll do my draft, and I'll still have $50 million in the salary cap next year.
How?
And I'll win more games than you will every time.
You're going to spend it all.
Okay, well, how do they have it this year?
What do you mean, how do they have it this year?
Last year.
They have the worst players in the league. They don't have any players.
Last year, they spent their salary cap more than this on two guards.
We don't know what they spent
yet. Those two guards, one of them got over $100 million. Frank, he ain't getting $100 million.
This guy won't?
No.
You don't think he's going to make more than that guard last year? We'll see.
We'll see. And I'll tell you this. He did exactly what you're saying he shouldn't do last year.
I'm going to see what these.
Still has a position and still in a position with $50 million of the cap.
Okay, we'll see.
All right. That was a good segment. I know the whole time I'm looking to see if we went too far. Are we gonna, have we went way over the time? Hopefully we didn't.
Dylan's over there like, gotta go to break.
D, our producer's over there. You don't see him sweat much. And he's like,
oh my gosh,
sweat.
Dylan has seen this he sees this on a regular occasion.
He's probably 3 years old. Yeah. But thank you guys.
I still love you.
Oh, ditto. That's the one thing about Frank and I. We'll fight like cats and dogs, and we'll go get a beer afterwards.
Though you're wrong, I still love it.
I bet you I'm right. We'll find out. Obviously, Friday, coming up Friday, there'll be more signings and trades, and whoever knows what's going on. A lot of movement in the NFL. So we'll update you on that. We'll also talk about the ACC tournament and other tournaments that'll be underway on Friday. And hopefully you enjoy the show today. We're going to take a breather and maybe a shower after all this sweat and getting this red face on. But thank you for joining us. You can follow us online on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
Easy to rile him up.
And I think I can say the same.
I wouldn't, man.
And you got the scroll at the bottom there with our emails. We always love to hear from you. We are looking for interns as well. So if you have a kid that's in college that wants to get into the sports business, we're looking for some contributors from
we definitely need that. If they can handle us.
Well, heck, we want them to handle the stuff we don't do well, like what Dylan does for us. Anything that has to do with basically computers and social media and things like that. But thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you Friday.